Welcome to the High Percentage Podcast. More porridge than you can handle.
Welcome back to the High Percentage Podcast. Today we're talking about BJJ in self-defense and why it's uniquely difficult to capture data for self-defense. High Percentage Podcast is brought to you by Keenan Cornelius' online lapel guard encyclopedia. Saw a lot more lapel guards and open guards being played at the Worlds this year, especially amongst like the blue and purple belts, which is kind of something that we had talked about before and we thought might happen. Keenan is, great thing about his program is he's pretty much the only one that is teaching lapel guard, or at least has an instructional out, so it's the only source that you can really get from it. If you have a Keenan Online subscription, he goes a little bit into the lapel guard, but he saves like the really deep, you know, breaking out all the little sub guards and worm guard and de la worm guard and all that stuff for his DVD. This is a great program. You can order the DVD or you can get like an online portal and then you can get access to similar to Keenan Online. And we're big fans of learning specialized systems on the High Percentage Podcast, and this is one of the most specialized that you can get. If you're a guard player, if you like the gi work, or if you're interested in becoming either, you know, guard player or someone that uses a lot of lapel grips, this is, I think, by far the best program to start with. I've been getting some feedback from people that have bought the program from like the affiliate links that I have on my website, and it's all been really good. It's a system that it kind of pushes you because, you know, it's not something that maybe a lot of other people in your gym are learning, so it's harder to kind of pull people aside and be like, hey, how do you do this? How do you do this? It'll be other people doing that to you. But also the Keenan, his lapel guard online portal has like a question and answer section and a forum section where you can, you know, kind of bounce ideas and, you know, any roadblocks that you hit off other students. It's got really good reviews online. You can easily kind of Google that, check out some of the reviews on Reddit. And if you enter the code HIGHPERCENTAGE at checkout, you can get 10% off. That's high, the word, and then percent, the symbol. Okay, so this is the first of probably a couple podcasts that I'm going to do back-to-back where we're going to take a little break from the tournament stuff and talk about the self-defense stuff that we do on the website. Obviously, I'm really into tournament jiu-jitsu, and that's a big focus for us. But my original focus when I got into martial arts and even Brazilian jiu-jitsu was always the practical self-defense side of things. And I really enjoy that side of things. And I feel like that's an important part of jiu-jitsu that we always need to practice and honor. And that's what is, you know, makes it a large part of service to the people that take it. So way back when I started High Percentage, I always said, yeah, I'd love to do some self-defense stuff too. Before I started High Percentage, I wrote a data write-up very similar to what I do for the site now, where we watched like 150 street fights, and that was a really big hit on the website that I posted on Martial Journal. I still get emails about that from time to time. Now that I've posted a couple of articles regarding street fights and self-defense stuff on High Percentage, it's been really interesting for me to watch the different reactions. I feel like High Percentage is developing kind of two separate groups of readership, and one of them, they come and they read the articles about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu training, their students or their coaches, and I hope they get a lot of value from that. And then the other people, I get the sense they only really read the self-defense stuff when I post it or when it gets shared online. They're not as interested in the rest. And that's one reason I called the website High Percentage Martial Arts and not High Percentage Jiu-Jitsu, was because I didn't want self-defense people to feel, you know, threatened, or that everything was kind of biased, that I did it by being like, oh, well, Jiu-Jitsu is in the name of the website, so obviously this person's trying to promote Jiu-Jitsu. To be frank, you know, jiu-jitsu is a proven self-defense martial art, and I mean, it just is, and it's not the only one. I think that even in our, like, boxing has been proven in self-defense. There's plenty of examples of people using, you know, elementary boxing techniques to defend themselves. No system is perfect and no system is complete, but, you know, just for the record, like, I'm very pro grappling, wrestling, judo, and Brazilian jiu-jitsu for self-defense. So what I found really interesting was that the people that read the BJJ tournament articles, I get a lot of positive feedback from them. And sometimes people are curious and they want to dig a little deeper and say, well, how did you get this number? How does this percentage square with this percentage? And I like engaging in those conversations because I want to be as transparent as possible. And I've always said that we're not perfect. The data that we collect has limitations, but, you know, the alternative is to just not do anything. So something's better than nothing. And I always feel like the community meets me with those sort of good intentions. And we just all kind of share the information and say, wow, interesting. But with the self-defense, I feel like I get a lot more animosity and pushback from the readership. And I have a theory, and it's probably wrong, but I do have a theory on why that is and what some of the differences between BJJ competitors that read our content and people that just practice self-defense or they don't practice BJJ at all. So my theory is that when you practice Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, even if you don't practice tournament jiu-jitsu, but you're just rolling every night, your beliefs about what works and what doesn't is constantly being kind of put under pressure and tested, and even sometimes exposed as being wrong, because at the end of the day, we're rolling, we're sparring, and results are the things that matters. And sometimes there's a technique that we really enjoy, but at some point we have to take a hard look and admit that it's not getting the results that we want. And maybe there's a technique that we hate. Just, you know, we hate barambolos, we hate people that do them, but even people that hate barambolos, there is a sort of grudging acknowledgement that they have to say, which is there's some people out there that are really, really good at them and can put them to very good use. And to me, I think that's one of the great things about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is it's hard to be too stubborn in this martial art because everyone that has been training for a while will say, hey, when I first started and I was a white or a blue belt, I really liked this style and I liked these kinds of guards and these techniques, but then I changed and now I'm a little bit different. And that's cool. That's what the BJJ journey is. With self-defense, that's something that is a little bit missing, which is that very often your beliefs about what works and what doesn't in self-defense or the nature of martial arts in general, it's not really being constantly put under pressure by other forces like it would be on the, you know, the nightly sparring in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or certainly the tournaments that you're doing every now and then. So when your beliefs aren't constantly being kind of put into question, it just allows them to cement and solidify more. And then those beliefs maybe become like part of your personal identity. And a website like ours comes along and is like, oh yeah, like we think that, you know, about 7 to 10 street fights go to the ground. At that point, it's difficult for you to accept the facts because you're just so personally invested in that truth that it's a tall order to ask you to, you know, turn on a dime like that. The other problem that we face with self-defense, and I think this is the number one challenge of the self-defense industry as a whole, is that the world that we live in is increasingly safe. And obviously there are parts of the world that are not safe and anything can happen, so it'll never be safe. But if you just look at, you know, crime statistics, it's safer than it's ever been. So, you know, tournament jiu-jitsu is rising where more people are competing all the time and it's at a real renaissance. But the self-defense industry is facing challenges because there are less people than ever before that have actual hands-on experience in street fights or self-defense situations. So it's much, much harder for them to test their knowledge, whereas someone like me, I mean, there's a tournament every weekend, so I can always be testing what we know about jiu-jitsu and sort of refining things a little bit harder for self-defense, which is why it kind of just becomes academic, because in a lot of times, you know, these are students training in self-defense techniques that probability-wise, they're most likely not going to use, and there's a very good chance that their instructor has either never used them at all or has only used them in very limited circumstance. And that's why I think people can argue a lot more about the self-defense stuff, because at the end of the day, you know, it's very difficult to prove anything, so it's just easy for it to sort of devolve into a giant pissing contest. But I still am trying to do the Lord's work and, you know, watch a lot of these street fights and just report on some of the interesting things that we see. We talk a lot about game theory at High Percentage, and I love applying concepts of game theory to competitive Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I ask myself a lot, can you apply game theory to self-defense? And the answer, quite honestly, is I don't know. Self-defense has a lot of unique challenges, and one of the challenges that there is such a variety amongst what we would consider self-defense situations. There's two kids that got in a brawl, you know, after class, and they're in junior high, and they drop their backpacks and their Pez dispensers, and they get in a fight, and someone films it on YouTube. Is that self-defense? Some people would say it's not. So when we watch street fights on the channel, a common thing that comes up is, you know, two people that are just fighting in a parking garage, I record those the same as a melee that breaks out at a concert festival, which a lot of videos are like that. I record that the same as something that's on closed circuit footage of a brawl that happens at a gas station. And people, I think, fairly say, well, all those situations aren't really equivalent. And they're right, they're not. But to me, I consider all of them self-defense because there's a level of danger in all of them. And it's hard, I don't want to be in a position where I'm quantifying how much danger is in each situation. Even those two kids fighting at the gymnasium in seventh period, like, there is danger. One of them could really get hurt. It's not as likely, but it absolutely can happen. The problem that happens is when I share the data, people, that's an easy thing that people can point to invalidate it and say, well, you know, I don't consider a lot of what you recorded self-defense, so therefore the whole thing is invalid, and I can just go on believing what I always have, because, you know, statistics aren't real. The other thing that makes it really difficult to apply something like game theory to self-defense, and just makes it difficult to say self-defense in general, is that game theory, most of the time the games are what they call zero-sum games, which means there is one winner and one loser, or there's a team that wins and a team that loses. And there's very clear win conditions, you know, that once these conditions are fulfilled, Team A has won the game. Self-defense doesn't have either of those things, so it's not a zero-sum game. There can be multiple losers in self-defense. There could be multiple winners. And why is that? Because there's no clear victory conditions in self-defense. We don't agree on what the goal in an actual fight is. And that sounds crazy, but it's very, very true. I mean, go ask, you know, go into random schools or talk to people in your gym and say, hey, what's the objective in a street fight? And you're going to get very different answers. Some will say, you know, the objective is to just walk away alive. Another people will say it's to not get hurt entirely. It's to control and subdue your attacker. Well, those are all like really different things. So with a lot of the studies that we do for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, what we do is we break out the stats between winners and losers. And we say, okay, here's how winners behaved in their matches. Here's how losers behaved. Right off the bat, we cannot do that in street fights because it's not clear what makes someone a winner and what makes someone a loser. We could do it based on who got incapacitated. That is possible. But there are many fights in which people don't get incapacitated, and it's impossible to do it based off damage because that involves like a lot of subjective interpretation. So, you know, right off the bat, that's a non-starter. We kind of just have to report on what happens during street fights. And the last challenge I want to mention is the challenge of we can only observe what is recorded. So this is another argument that people make online that I think is a really legitimate argument, which is that not all self-defense situations will be recorded on camera. Something like a sexual assault, for example, you know, very, very unlikely that would be recorded and posted on a public place like the internet where I'd be able to watch it or where I'd even want to watch it, frankly. Other like really serious crimes and assaults would be of that nature. So we're sort of stuck with kind of the casual street fights that you see. And I completely recognize there is a whole portion of fights that we will likely never be able to see. But all data is limited, so not having that doesn't invalidate the data. Because really, the alternative is we just give up, right? And we can't do that. Like, there has to be some sort of useful data that we can collect. And even if that means that the data that we collect is more like lower level violence on the full spectrum of self-defense, I think that's probably the most common situations that we're going to encounter. So being prepared for those is important, and it could be valuable too. So I'll end it with this. And in the next podcast, we'll get into a little bit more of the data of self-defense, how long street fights last, how often do they go to the ground, when are there multiple attackers, things like that. But in the beginning, I wanted to lead off with this discussion and maybe just hopefully leave with some sort of agreement, which is that we understand that the data we collect on self-defense is limited, it's not perfect, and it gives us maybe a limited view of the full spectrum of self-defense. But one, we're coming at it with the best of intentions. This is the best that we can do with the data that is available. And if people have better suggestions or better ways to collect the data, I'd really be open to that because I think there are better ways to collect it. But I also think that, you know, if you are interested in self-defense data, it's important to kind of keep an open mind. And if you're reading these articles and your background is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, even if it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for self-defense, it's going to be easier for you to keep an open mind because, just a little spoiler warning here, like a lot of the research that we've done shows that, you know, taking a fight to the ground, controlling and subduing an opponent on the ground leads to much safer outcomes for both participants. And that probably won't be a surprise to you. It's not going to create like this crazy cognitive dissonance, which has to, you know, forces you to try to rethink everything that you knew. So for the most part, you'll probably look at this information and say, yeah, like that's about what I thought, but there's some interesting stuff in there that maybe can help inform my approach to self-defense.
That's all for this podcast. If you want to check out all the articles that we published over on the website, you can go to hypercentagemartialarts.com. If you want to get in contact with us, I'm at hypercentagemartialarts@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page where we update with all of our articles, our podcasts, and I even do a Facebook Live once a week where we watch tournaments and matches in real time and do some of the data recording so you can get a little insight into our process. I should mention that if you want to keep track with other projects that I'm involved in, I'm the managing editor of a great website called ujujitsu.com. I write articles on there, and also I help corral the other writers. We try to put out quality content every week. And I've also written a book called The True Believers. It's available on Amazon. You can just Google The True Believers, Lewis Martin. It's kind of a biography of my early martial arts training in Monterey. Check that out. Thank you for listening to this, and we'll see you next week on the High Percentage Podcast.